There is a war on truth, and the liars are winning. That is the long-considered view of award-winning investigative journalist, newspaper editor, and now academic Stephen Davis. And he's determined to tell you how the liars are winning, the techniques they're using, and the increasing pace with which they're using them. In a new book called Truth Teller, Stephen Davis has helpfully detailed 11 strategies used by the powerful to distort the truth, to bring down enemies, to cover up scandals, or simply to redirect attention away from them. And each one comes with helpful examples, many of them drawn from his own experience as a reporter and an editor. Stephen Davis, hello to you.
Good morning, Hugh.
Is truth as a concept finished in our public square?
I think there's a danger of it being finished. I think we've got a perfect storm here. I call it the equivalent of a public health emergency, except I think it's more likely to kill society. First off, we have vast volumes of information circulating rapidly around the world. Secondly, a lot of it is false. Our ability to detect it, sometimes even our interest in detecting it, I think, is lessening. And of course, the group that we used to rely on as the gatekeepers to help us sort this stuff out, journalists, there's fewer of us around.
So you have, in your book, detailed off these strategies that you have found and your experience are being used, almost by definition, because you've had a long career in this business. Many of these predate the digital age. So given that people were trying to lie to you and divert you and dissemble, etc., going back over the decades, is it getting easier for people to use those tools?
Yes, the reason I wrote Truth Teller is because I believe it's getting easier. I believe the liars are more successful. They get away with their lies because we are distracted. They get away with their lies because they are hidden in vast volumes of information. And even though some of their techniques are old, the way that they are used is quite sophisticated. As an example, now there is a technique where you create your own conspiracy theories to hide an actual conspiracy. In the case of the Russians, where the former Russian spy Skripal was poisoned in the United Kingdom, within 10 days, four completely different conspiracy theories were being shared around the world by millions of people. Now, if you go back and research that story and you look at it and you see, hold on, there's five different versions of the event. Do I really know what's true? What an excellent way of hiding the truth.
And who's cooking up those conspiracy theories?
Well, in this particular case, it was a small group of Russians in St. Petersburg. And I have traced the operations of this group. They created an entirely false racial confrontation in Missouri. And it was created by posting a picture of a young black boy with a badly beaten face and a suggestion that the KKK was coming to town and he'd been beaten up by campus. This was a completely invented story, but it created actual racial tension and the world's press turned out to cover it. And I've tracked the efforts of this individual online, and he was also responsible for creating anti-immigrant conspiracies at the time of the Brexit vote in the United Kingdom. So you can see why these techniques, some of them are old. Now with modern technology, they're a very low-cost, successful way of lying to you.
Is that being driven by, somewhere up the chain, the Russian government? Or are we in a world where people realise that it's fun to make stuff up and then watch all the rabbits run around in the field?
It seems like fun. And one of my bugbears, and I'm passionate about, is that people think conspiracy theories are fun and interesting, and they're not. They're really very dangerous indeed. My students, you know, they like to share conspiracy theories. Adults like to share conspiracy theories. But all it takes, and we have seen that recently, is one young man who lives in, you know, a basement and has access to guns to believe this stuff, and we have a tragedy on our hands.
You're talking about New Zealand?
Absolutely. I'm talking about the Christchurch gunman.
Because you are now living, you were formerly the head of journalism at Macleay College in Sydney. You're now with Otago University based in Dunedin, which was where the New Zealand gunman, an Australian, was living before he went to Christchurch to start the shooting.
Yes, Australian gunman. And he was at one stage looking at the Dunedin Mosque as a target. I believe actually when the full story is known, I've been talking to fairly reliable sources, he's actually gone around the world looking for soft targets to attack Muslims, and sadly settled on my home country because it seemed like the softest target of all.
I want to get back to that particular thing and the reaction since and how it's worked, but to go to your strategies, what are the top two or three strategies that you believe exist whereby the powers, whoever they may be, what are the strategies they're using to distort the truth?
One is, which I write about in Truth Teller, is simply this: delay, delay, delay till everybody gets bored. You take a story that you want to cover it up, and when journalists come and ask you questions about it, you fob them off or you give them half an answer. And then a week later, there might be a few people asking questions. A month later, there might be only one or two people asking questions. A year later, nobody's asking questions because we've moved on, because the news cycle is so intense and so rapid, and journalists, I'm afraid, are so kind of lured by the siren song of social media that we simply forget to follow things up. That's a very effective technique. Second technique, the creation of conspiracy theories, has proved very effective. And thirdly, this is an old one, but shoot the messenger. Now it's so easy to damage somebody's reputation via social media that you can fairly effectively take a whistleblower and trash their reputation online so that nobody believes them.
What about the laws of defamation? I'm particularly thinking the Australian setting. Are they in the wrong balance in terms of defending those who would seek to hold the powerful to account?
The laws of defamation, I think, are completely unbalanced. United States has many faults, but its First Amendment protects journalists and protects them, for instance, from being injuncted before they do a story. And now, as news organizations have fewer resources, governments and corporations are still rich and powerful. And so sometimes now, unfortunately, it only takes the threat of a lawsuit to get the media organization to back away from the story because they simply can't afford to fight the case.
Let me bring you to another thing, which is what's now being called deep fake. And this is technologies which I believe are now becoming commercially available, anyone can use them, in which someone's face and their voice can be amended so that their lips can appear to move and their voice can be amended to make sounds that have them saying things they plainly are not saying. Are you seeing that as a development, and where is that going to take us?
Absolutely. People have often asked me whether I believe, after writing Truth Teller, that I should be an optimistic or a pessimistic about the future. I tell people I started as an optimist and I ended my research as a pessimist, and things are only going to get worse. Deep fakes and the ability for artificial intelligence to create completely artificial worlds is going to make it even harder in the next few years for us to tell the difference between fact and fiction. But, you know, we're already seeing the techniques of distortion of video even before we get to the deep fakes, when a CNN reporter, when they tried to stop him asking questions at the White House and the White House distributed that video where he allegedly grabbed the assistant, they simply slowed it down to make it look worse than it was.
And that was where a White House intern was taking a microphone away from a reporter who was grilling, a CNN reporter was grilling Donald Trump. This was after the midterm elections. And they put out, the White House put out a tape there which cut it in a way that made it look as if he had in some way brushed her off in a physical way.
Yeah, the White House put out a fake video and it was very successful. A lot of people believed what they said. The problem is these circulate so rapidly around the world, they are well ahead of the ability of the truth to catch up. There's one recently very good study, I think it was done by MIT, and it shows clearly that falsehoods travel around the world faster than facts.
Let's go back to Christchurch. After it, the New Zealand Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern called for controls to be put onto the global social media giants, Facebook, of course, where this guy live streamed what he was getting up to. How do you view Facebook, not to select it out above others, but because of its power? Do you see it as a net force for good in the world or not?
No, I think Facebook is now the world's most socially irresponsible company, and it's positively dangerous. The problem is Facebook is a publisher and broadcaster, but refuses to let itself be treated and regulated as such. Everything we say in this interview and everything broadcast on the ABC has to take responsibility for. Facebook adopts the position that, oh, these are other people doing things on our platform and we're not responsible. You can't tell me they can't fix their algorithms. If I go on Facebook and type in three words, they've sent me a tailored ad. So Facebook needs to be regulated and treated as a publisher. And also, there are literally thousands of very talented reporters and researchers around the world. Facebook could be hiring these people to monitor what's online.
One of the things which all big corporations require is what they call a social license. In other words, the public have got to feel that they're legitimate enough in their core business. Banks, for example, mining companies, tobacco companies have lost their social license Yes. over time. Do you think that Google and Facebook, but let's focus on Facebook for the moment, will lose its social license and therefore create a circumstance in which governments are empowered effectively because the people are crying for it, where they start to shut down even those giants?
As part of the Truth Teller book tour, I've been speaking to lots of young people who turn up at various events, and it's very interesting that they now treat Facebook and regard it differently. I think it is, we're on the turn here. And the real solution in this is education. In the next few years, I think everybody needs to be teaching media literacy education, teaching people to be responsible sharers and consumers of information. I think once we do that, and once Facebook is forced into a position of accountability, its power will diminish, and I think that's a good thing.
Stephen Davis, author of Truth Teller, an investigative reporter's journey through the world of truth prevention, fake news and conspiracy theories. How good to talk to you today. Thank you.
Thank you, Hugh.